a pioneering Hong Kong entrepreneur who helped build up infrastructure in the Pearl River Delta region during China's early days of reform and opening up. Sir Gordon Wu returns to AmCham Hong Kong to share his vision of the Greater Bay Area and Hong Kong's future. Hi, Sir Gordon. Welcome back to AmCham Hong Kong. Let me start by asking you a question on the Greater Bay Area development. You were among the earliest Hong Kong entrepreneurs to invest in the Pearl River Delta region at the beginning of China's reform and opening up. Unlike many Hong Kong investors who developed real estate projects, you have spent over 50 billion yuan in various infrastructure projects, including China's first superhighway connecting Guangzhou and Shenzhen and Wumen Bridge. In 1983, you first recommended to build a Hong Kong Zhuhai-Macau bridge, which was opened for traffic last year. Why did you put so much emphasis on building highways and bridges? And is it important for economic development in the region?
Well, it is very important for economic development. If you look at the history of economic growth in the various more advanced countries, it started with China. For instance, they built the Great Canal. You look at England, Industrial Revolution. They built canals as with locks and also trains. And there was enormous opportunity for the British investors when America started to build the Transcontinental Railway after the Civil War. So I studied history of these developments and concluded back in the 70s that no country's economy can advance without infrastructure. And why infrastructure? Because infrastructure will bring you better efficiency. You're not making any, producing any wealth in a traffic jam. You are not producing any wealth when the best machinery doesn't have the electricity to drive them. So what I did was I went inside the Pearl River Delta and studied the area and said, well, if we can improve the infrastructure on so highways and bridges, as well as building power stations, I believe that there's such a large pool of good people, good labor, and a fraction of Hong Kong costs, the industry must have moved in the way that the U.S. industries has moved into Japan, into the four little tigers of Asia. And the next thing is that Hong Kong industries will move inside this Pearl River Delta. And that was the bet, the conclusion that I made. And 40 years later, it proved that I was right. So you need to have the infrastructure to improve your efficiency.
Yes, and speaking of infrastructure, you know other Bay Areas around the world quite well, especially the San Francisco Bay Area. The San Francisco Bay Area has a population of 7 million people in 9 counties and 101 cities. Their network of transportation is well developed there. There are 5 bridges, including the Golden Gate Bridge and the Oakland Bay Bridge, interstate highways, as well as the public transportation system, the BART. Yet the average commute time is close to 60 minutes each day, and some super commuters even need to travel for 3 hours. The California government tries to build a high-speed rail, but it has been 17 years. The high-speed rail system is yet to be materialized. In this part of the Greater Bay Area, with a population of over 69 million people, what lesson can we learn from the San Francisco Bay Area?
Well, San Francisco Bay Area doesn't have naturally. They were not born with all the infrastructure now in place. It was back in the 1930s that they built the Golden Gate and the Bay Bridge. And actually, they have been building quite a few others, like San Mateo Bridge and Carquinez. So, actually, as I said before, bridges and mass transits and subhighways improve efficiency. But the reason why in America it's very difficult to to implement any project, because now you need to do a lot of what they call environmental study. You got to consult the people, and when you consult people, there obviously will be objections, and therefore there's a case where in China is a more totalitarian state, and if the state thinks this is a good thing, and they blow the whistle, and the shuffle will appear and get things done. You look at the high-speed rail in Guangdong, you know, it's done so quickly. And you look at how many bridges that China has built. Donald Trump even said that China has built probably in 20 years much more bridges than America has built in the last 200 years. So,
yes.
Therefore, it's a case of system that democratic system is everybody has got to agree before you can do anything. Whereas in China, if the ruling hierarchy believes that this is the right thing to do, and they give the nod, and things get done.
Yes, and one of the biggest strengths of the Greater Bay Area is the concept of one-hour living circle, because we have the bridges and the high-speed train, and Hong Kongers can travel to Guangzhou in 1 hour by the high-speed train, or to Zhuhai in 1.5 hours through the bridge. But the biggest obstacle of GBA is policy inconsistency over three different territories, because there are three separate legal systems, three currencies, and three tax systems. It is easy to build up infrastructure in the GBA, but building institutional confidence and system breakthroughs are much harder. Many young Hong Kongers don't know much about the GBA, while some people fear that it is a means to let the Hong Kong economy and its system integrate to that of mainland China. In fact, Hong Kong has been integrating to the Chinese economy through the Pearl River Delta region in the past four decades, and in the last 17 years through SIPA. What role should Hong Kong play in the GBA initiative, and should the Hong Kong model prevail?
I don't think we can impose the Hong Kong model upon the whole of the PRC or even the Greater Bay Area. No. Hong Kong has a very good model, but on the other hand, we just can't impose that on the others. Now, as far as how to integrate with China, well, first of all, there are two parts. One is the economic part. We have de facto integrated with China. I mean, if people say, well, we don't want to integrate with China, well, he should have his head examined. Because suppose you build a wall along the Shenzhen River and say there are no trade between PRC and Hong Kong, I think Hong Kong will wither very, very quickly. But politically, it will take a long time. We have seen that centuries of hostility between the European powers, and ultimately, they even have a European Union. So the most important thing is that we've got to build trust. We've got to build respect. First of all, is the respect, and then the trust. We've got to respect the system, political system of PRC. That's what they are. And of course, Hong Kong has a unique system, because although we are part of China, we have a one country, two system. And we certainly would want to impress upon the PRC general public and say, well, we are different because it's a two system. And I think on the whole, the last 22 years, PRC has been respecting this very diligently. And so we are actually in the best of two worlds, in that we are riding on their prosperity, because it gives us Hong Kong a lot of opportunities to provide the kind of products and services that PRC wanted, particularly the Greater Bay Area. And that's our opportunity. But we can't do that with an open hostility or disrespect for their system. I mean, we can't impose our system onto any or China or any nation. This is wrong. See, we've got to respect other people's political system.
As when Deng Xiaoping came up with this idea of one country, two systems, he wanted Hong Kong to maintain a high degree of autonomy, because Hong Kong's vitality and Hong Kong's success and prosperity is important for China's success. Hong Kong is treated as a separate economy, a separate customs territory under the Hong Kong Policy Act. Since its passage, the State Department issues an annual report assessing the situation in Hong Kong. According to this year's report, Hong Kong still maintains a sufficient, although diminished, degree of autonomy. If the political climate worsens in Hong Kong and the U.S. decides to treat Hong Kong as another Chinese city, it will be devastating not just for Hong Kong, but also for China, as well as for multinational businesses who have chosen Hong Kong as its regional headquarters. What advice would you give to both Hong Kong and China?
Well, if Hong Kong is integrated completely into China, just like any other Chinese city, I don't think it will be devastating for China, but it might be devastating for a lot of Hong Kong people. You see, Deng Xiaoping, a very wise man, and he was very correct, he said, one of his most famous sayings is that it doesn't matter if it's a black cat or white cat, as long as cat or mouse is a good cat.
Yes.
So he foresaw that the growth of the China economy, which by the time he took over, it was really nearly bankrupt. And if we wanted to get off on the growth path, you need Hong Kong's help. You need the world's help. And you got to change the system. And that's why the die-hard kind of socialism under Lenin and Mao Zedong, he changed it. He said, well, let some of the people get wealthy first. And therefore, basically, he's changing it into a state-managed socialism with Chinese characteristics, which is very close, similar to capitalism, but with more state control. Now, Hong Kong people were very wise. A lot of our compatriots, you know, go inside and have factories and have business undertakings and look at the kind of success that Hong Kong people have been enjoying. So those people who go in, some of them don't respect the system, but most of them do respect the system because they are different. And this diversity doesn't help, doesn't hurt us trying to help each other. And this is basically the importance. We keep our system, they keep their system politically, but economically we integrate together. And this is the spirit of the Greater Bay Area. On the other hand, if Hong Kong people are arrogant and say, well, we don't want to ride with you, it doesn't matter. The train, the great big train of the Greater Bay Area will move on, regardless of whether Hong Kong rides on it or not. So Hong Kong people must understand that it's such a momentum that little Hong Kong cannot stop it. Their economy is much bigger than Hong Kong. On the other hand, if we ended up cooperating with them by offering the kind of services that Hong Kong people can do well, and then I think we have an opportunity.
One final question. What will happen to both Hong Kong and China beyond 2047?
Well, beyond 2047, I foresee the growth of China. Because, you know, they stopped all these political wranglings, like the or the economic policies which is out of this world. For instance, the Great Leap Forward, the commune system, the Red Guards, they dumped all that. And of course, the people in power now were very different than the people who were ruling China in the 50s. I mean, they were a bunch of people who only learned history from the history books. They were not at the scene there. So China will keep on growing. Now, for Hong Kong people or young people, if they don't respect this kind of history, and if they think that we are still number one, much better than China, then they are wrong. And if they don't want to cooperate with China, then they will lose all the opportunities.
Thank you very much, Sir Gordon.